sponsored by JMR Rentals, professional digital cinema and broadcast equipment rentals in Brooklyn, New York. JMRNY.com.
Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend. I'm Jason Godby, and joining me via Zoom today, he is the director of the new feature documentary, Kiss the Future, Mr. Anad Sassine Sane. Welcome, Anad.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for doing this. I appreciate you. Where are you coming to us from?
I'm in Marin right now, just north of San Francisco.
I saw the movie last night, and it's quite a movie. I'll just say that. I want you to talk about it and tell us more about it and so forth. But first, I think we kind of need a history lesson. So can you give me the historical background about like Sarajevo, the conflict? Can you give me a little bit of background on that? And then we'll get into the film.
Yeah. So at the fall of the Berlin Wall, the geopolitical dynamics of Europe started drastically changing because there wasn't the threat of the Eastern Bloc as it used to be. And for, you know, a good 40, 50 years, that's the way that Europe was defined. Once that happened, there wasn't a need for certain alliances. And Yugoslavia, simultaneously, Tito had passed away, who was the president of Yugoslavia. And Milosevic was second in command in the Serbian side of the party in Serbia and former Yugoslavia. And he had ambitions for power, and he saw a way to gain power by stoking nationalism. And he created an agenda of hate and xenophobia and ended up targeting Sarajevo. And the reason he targeted Sarajevo is what's so unique about if you go there is you go on one intersection, there'll be a synagogue on one corner, a mosque on another corner, a Catholic church, and an Orthodox church. And these churches, these places of worship have been coexisting for thousands of years. And to a nationalist, that's a threat. Pluralism is a threat. And so through a long series of circumstances in the wars of Yugoslavia, he ended up surrounding Sarajevo with the Yugoslav army and cutting off all food and water and power, and had snipers and tanks shell civilians for the better part of four or five years.
Fall of the Wall was 1989. This is happening in the early, I think it started about 1992.
Yeah, that's right.
So from like 92 to 95, 96, this is happening. What I was curious about is why this movie, why now? Like, how did it kind of come to be and how did you get involved?
Yeah, so I was there during part of the war. I have a Croatian father and Serbian mother and Albanian wife. And I was born in Slovenia, but lived predominantly in Croatia. And I saw, you know, in what I just described, my country get torn apart by one man's agenda for power. And, you know, I've been living in the United States for some time and started seeing similar type of things happening in the United States with how polarized the country has become and, you know, politicians' agendas for power and dividing us. And 2017 was the anniversary of this extraordinary concert where U2 went to Sarajevo at the end of the war. It was a post-war concert, and there's 40,000 plus people that had been fighting each other not long before and killing each other. And Bono lost his voice or strained his voice to almost lost three songs into the concert and had the audience sing the rest of the concert together. So people who were in effect fighting each other were now singing and dancing together. And I saw this as a way in to talk about this moment in history, about the power of music, and that couldn't be the whole film. It had to be about people's resilience during the war using music and art, which culminates into this concert. So it's a film I wanted to make, but didn't have access to the band or the archive that the world had never seen. A couple of years later, I started working with Matt Damon at Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's company, writing a screenplay for them. And he told me a story about how he was friends with Bono. And I was like, wow, that's a great way in. And I asked him to produce the film. And then I met Bill Carter, who wrote this book about his personal journey there as an aid worker in Sarajevo and reaching out and contacting the band. And he became part of the film. And we developed it together. And And that was the kind of machinations that it went through to become what it is today.
You know, you're talking about the historical context, and you know, there's a line in the film, it's pretty early on in the film, and I can't remember who says it offhand, but one of the interview subjects says, it's as if a president of the United States surrounded New York City and used the American army to basically do to New York what they did to Sarajevo. And you know, to me, man, that didn't sound like a hypothetical all that much. Like, to me, that sounded like a warning. I live in New York City. And is this a cautionary tale?
I think it's a number of things. I don't think you can call it one thing, which it can be challenging, but I think it's about the power of music. It's about people finding the light in the darkness, but the darkness comes from the cautionary tale of what happened there. And if we don't protect our democracy and maintain civility and an ability to, find common ground with those we see as an enemy at time, it's very dangerous where society can go, as we're witnessing around the world, repeatedly today.
So to get back to the filmmaking, so you start to put this together, Bill Carter's developing it with you. When did it kind of become a movie? When did you know that you had something?
Well, very quickly, once I asked Matt Damon to produce it and Drew Vinton, who works with him at his company, Matt went to Bono. Bono said, "We're in," but yet we still had to go to Dublin and tell the band what our intent was with the film. And the intent was, the band was very firm of, we don't want a film about us. Like, there's been enough movies made about us. There's been enough attention. And we shared with them that what we wanted to do was make a story about this thriving underground art scene in Sarajevo, where people who had not even sustenance were going through sniper fire to these underground clubs and, to gather and to feel human and playing music and making art and performing the Hair musical every day and starting a film festival and, in a basement on a generator where filmmakers like Alfonso Cuarón were having their film snuck into Sarajevo. There was this extraordinary explosion of the need for culture and humanity and connection. That's what we pitched them, and that's what we made. The film culminates to the concert. And the reason, one of the big reasons is, one, it's a very powerful, moment, and people will see why when they see the concert because of the dynamics at play. But the film begins with a lot of protagonists that all end up at this concert. And so, you have a lot of different narrative threads that are interwoven and all lead to one climax, which is this concert.
Can you talk a little bit more about Bill Carter and his involvement? Because he's a key part of the film. And does your a lot of this archival footage come from him?
Well, the part of the footage that comes from Bill is Bill's part in the film. So there's a lot of archive that comes from sources like CNN. Then there was these two cinematographers that were living there under the siege, whose most of that very powerful footage of people living under siege comes from those guys. So I had to, being from Yugoslavia, had to tell it from the point of view of local people. Bill's Carter is a fantastic book. Bill's book Fool's Russian, but it's a foreigner's point of view of going into Sarajevo. And, there had to be a balance between, yes, he was a very important catalyst in reaching out to the band. And so I had this extraordinary gift of being able to work with him and share his story with the world. But that wasn't the core of the story. The core of the story was the Sarajevans. And for example, one of the people who was the researcher that we were working with, Vesna, who's the journalist in the film and, who gets married in the film, as I was talking to her, looking for stories of people having lived under the siege and being artists and expressing themselves in the way that we wanted to highlight, she told me she was married during the siege. I was like, "Do you have footage of that?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she reluctantly shared it with me. And I saw this footage. I was like, "Oh my God, you have to be in the movie." And she was reluctant to. She didn't, it wasn't her inclination to want to do this, but then she became, part of the story. So in answering your question about Bill, he was a very important part because he reached out to the band after the band put out this message on MTV, drawing attention to what was happening there. And it was, really amazing having his story in the middle of the film there to be able to connect, Sarajevo and U2 and these extraordinary satellite links that they did.
One of the things I noticed about the movie as well is that it's like nobody cares about something until America cares about something. And it feels like that Because America and the West didn't get involved till very late. And the conflict, I think it was over in like 4 days, the film says, at once the West gets involved. Did you see any resentment in these people about, because there is a bit of resentment toward the people who are like sort of tragedy tourists that come over there, the journalists, and a lot of people thought people like Bill were just going to come and go. Did you find that all this time later?
Yeah, I think there's resentment. I mean, I think anytime people are put under horrific circumstance, you need to, you feel there's people responsible for this, and those grievances don't go away. I think that, there was resentment towards Europe, and there was resentment towards the United States. There was, there's a when innocent people are dying, there's a lot of the world at whole is to blame for it.
When you were doing this, because you have all this archival footage, you have all these stories, and you're trying to put all this stuff together, was there something that was like a home point for you that you said, you know, this is my through line, this is the thing that no matter what?
The thing that I knew that I needed to do was do a collective memory from a lot of different points of view around this about this moment in time in history, with the center being about the power of music and the humanity in the darkness. And then the thing that the editor and I kind of, as we were shooting, were writing, was we wanted the president of the United States to talk about why they couldn't get involved until 4 years into the conflict, and then have a girl who was 13 years old, now an adult, react to that then and now. And we wanted to put the president and this 13-year-old girl on an even playing field. And we wanted to put a local punk rock band on an equal playing field as the biggest band in the world. There is no buildup in the film showcasing why U2 was the biggest band in the world with album covers and awards. And they just come into the film the same way that the punk rock musicians in Sarajevo come into it, right? So we're interweaving all these different people's experiences. So you have Bono react to something, and in the same, very quickly after, you have this local musician, punk rock musician, react to it. And once we knew we had that as the kind of tapestry for the way to take the audience through this journey, then became the biggest challenge of how do you introduce, because this isn't a film about what happened in Yugoslavia. This is a film about how people survived under horrific circumstances, right? This isn't a history documentary. There's way better documentaries about this, why Yugoslavia broke apart in the siege of Sarajevo, like the death of Yugoslavia on BBC, if somebody wants to see that, right? So there was a balance between how much history do you have to set up in the first little bit of the film in order to establish the circumstances that people were dealing with, like that line where you hear the former UN ambassador, Bosnian ambassador, say, imagine the president of the United States surrounding New York City, right? We needed to kind of create context. And we knew that the concert was a place where all our protagonists ended up. And so we start with all these different narrative threads and lead up to this concert, right? So those were the kind of elements that, as storytellers, we were dealing with. And one of the smartest decisions I made was having my editor be with me through every shooting of the film. We would shoot an interview, somebody would say something, and we'd say, okay, how does that interweave with how somebody else said, and then drive the interview in that direction, right? So that's the way that we went about making the film.
How long from, like, you know, sort of the birth of the idea through the, how long are we talking about in terms of the process?
Well, I started thinking about making the film in 2017 at the anniversary of the concert. There was a bunch of press out there, Rolling Stone and a number of different places where there was the anniversary of this meaningful, powerful concert there's no archive in. So I started thinking about it in 2017. In or during COVID, I was writing a script for Pearl Street, which was Matt Damon, Ben Affleck's company, which is when Matt told me about this beautiful story and this relationship he had with Bono, and when I asked him to come on as a producer. So once Matt said, I'm in Pearl Street, then things moved very quickly.
You guys had the good fortune to open Tribeca last year. Did you get a chance to see it with the audience? And have you seen it with audiences since?
Oh, many times. I saw it at Berlin, where we premiered at the Berlinale. I saw it at Tribeca. I saw it in Sarajevo. I saw it in Rome. You know, it was pretty powerful in when we premiered in Berlin. Well, when we first started making the film, we were making a film about the end of the last war in Europe, and then war in Europe broke out, which nobody thought could have happened. So we went to Berlin, and everything was focused on Ukraine and the relevance of Ukraine to our film, right? 6 months later was the Rome Film Festival, and is what was going on in Israel and Gaza was, you know, present and happening. So that's what people were talking about and thinking about and relating our film to what was happening now in Gaza and Israel, right? So I had very moving experiences with the audience watching them, but each place was different in the way that people, what was affecting them because of what was happening in current affairs.
I've heard people say that this is sort of a should be required viewing here in America, like this type of history, and with this really human perspective, like this is something people need to see. But you know, it's that old adage of like those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it. But and I think Bill makes this remark to Bono in the interview where he talks about like we keep doing this. Does this make a statement about that? And do you think that this type of film could actually affect change?
I mean, I'd like to hope so. I mean, you know, I think the belief was during the time in what Bill was doing and what the Mohammed Huckabee, who was the Bosnian ambassador to the UN, who was responsible for orchestrating that concert, was is that cultural diplomacy and that art and music can affect change. And, you know, one of the people who's just such an extraordinary person in our film that not enough attention is drawn to is the ambassador to the UN, who Bono went to when he wanted to organize this concert. And, you know, initially the concert was just going to be for the Bosnians. And Mohammed Huckabee said, we need to invite those who we see as our enemy. That's the way that we end and stop the cycle. And I didn't pay enough attention to that in the film, which is a real shame, because he was the one who said, we need to invite who we see the Serbian aggressor, and we need to invite Croatians, and we need to invite everybody. And then he was the one who selected the local punk rock band that we follow from the beginning of the film to open for you two. And he was the one who chose to have a Muslim choir open the concert. And you know, you don't see often in modern culture in the United States, you know, Muslim culture painted in such a positive light and an essential part of pluralism, which is what the film is about, right? So to answer your question, I'd like to believe that the film can, but I think intent is important, and the intent with this film is to promote the beauty of pluralism and the necessity for it in society.
At this point, what is happening with the film now in terms of distribution? Can you fill us in, and can you tell people where they can find out more?
Well, there will be a special event screening at AMC on the 21st with an intro from Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and then a Q&A with Bill Carter, myself, and some of the band. And then it'll go in a lot more AMC theaters on the 23rd of February 23rd. And then the film will be on Paramount Plus, I believe, May 7th, if I'm not mistaken. But the film, the way that it was designed and made, was to be very experiential, not just from the concert because it's in Atmos and Dolby, but in the way that it was designed and made. So we're hoping that people will get into the theaters, because it is a very immersive experience, and the intent and the way that we made the film.
What is next for you? What else do you have going on next?
Well, the script that I had written for Matt and Pearl Street, I'm gonna go direct now. So we're this screenplay I wrote, we're casting now, and hopefully we plan, I have financing for it with Wayfair Studios, plan to shoot it this summer.
Excellent, excellent. So your publicist is telling me that you don't have an exact date, but it will definitely be on Paramount Plus this spring. I think it's a very powerful film. I think it's a very moving film. It's a sobering film for a lot of people. But I'm glad that we were able to give it some context because I do think, and I don't know if you feel this way, but it does kind of feel like a part of history that's forgotten now, even though it's not that long ago.
It seems like an eternity ago, the invasion of Ukraine and, you know, the ramifications of that. So with the news cycles and how rapid they are and all the social media and, you know, 100 years ago, we didn't know what was happening at every part and every conflict around the globe at the same time. So we're so overwhelmed with information that it's almost impossible for people to be this, present in people's consciousness, what happened in Sarajevo in 96.
Well said, well said. All right, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And next project, after you direct this movie, come back on. We'd love to have you.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to watch the film and share this.
Thank you very much. And that's all we got for you today. Thanks so much for taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more of our content, including our movie reviews, visit our website, norestfortheweekendpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube, youtube.com/getbehindtherabbit. I'd like to thank my guest, Nanad Sassine Sain, and our sponsor, JMR Rentals, for Behind the Rabbit Productions. I'm Jason Godby. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.